Hi everyone. So we're trying something new today. We're going to start introing our episodes with a little bit of a clip at the beginning, just because we found that we tend to get stuck in quite quickly with our guests, and we want to make sure that we have adequate time to introduce them. So this week we're talking about the 4-day work week, which has always been quite an interesting topic to me. It's been definitely in the public discourse for the last couple of years, certainly around Europe, as a way to address some of the structural challenges facing the workforce and work today.
So on this episode, we have Rich Howell, who is the founder of Marvel FMCG, which is a certified B Corp and also a recruitment company. And you actually found him, Dan, didn't you, on LinkedIn?
I did. I merely stumbled upon one of his posts that had gone viral, as he mentioned during this episode. If you follow Rich on LinkedIn, he really is very vocal, very direct around two main topics. One is around the 4-day working week, and two is around neurodiversity. And he not only is really honest, but he gives those true insights from a person perspective, from a leadership perspective, and from a business leader perspective. And I just thought it was an absolute no-brainer to bring him onto Work Is Weird Now podcast.
Yeah, and he's got 50,000 followers or something, quite impressive. And we do actually touch on both of those topics in this episode. So we talk about the 4-day work week and the fact that he formalized it within his company in 2024. And that has been hugely successful for him. I think overall revenue has increased by 45% since they brought it in. They've reduced sick days. Their people are happier. But also he's quite honest about the challenges and sort of says this might not be for everybody. And then we also kind of veer into a conversation around ADHD and the impact that's had on him and actually our families as well, and our kind of personal experience with ADHD and autism as well, and sort of how we see the world of work unfolding for people with various sort of neurodiversity challenges who are emerging from, you know, childhood and the education system today. So yeah, interesting conversation. Hopefully you enjoy it. See you soon.
Welcome to the Work Is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age.
Welcome to Work Is Weird Now podcast. How are you doing, Rich?
I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
Good, yeah. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Today we're going to be talking about the 4-day work week, which is something that Rich has some very intimate experience with as he has implemented at his own company. And so we'll be getting into some of the interesting details around how it's worked for them, whether or not they would recommend it to other companies, what the successes and failures, if any, have been of the approach. And we'll talk more broadly about the 4-day work week in the context of work in the UK and globally and what it could potentially mean for organizations moving forward. But we start every episode with a request of all of us to provide us with what your weird work moment of the week was. And I will admit I've not done a lot of thinking around this, so I will try to come up with something on the fly, but maybe while you guys are talking, the brain will start churning into action today. So should we start with you, Dan?
I had a bit of a typo moment this week that was an email to my boss that I somehow managed to make it appear that I thought the Eiffel Tower was in Amsterdam. And his reply was deadpan, just so you know, the Eiffel Tower's in Paris. And the more I tried to rectify it, the hole was just getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And yeah, I don't think that's been a very good reflection on my knowledge of global landmarks.
So for clarity, you do actually know where the Eiffel Tower is?
I do, yeah.
Okay, good. Just so everybody understands.
Because he told me it was in Paris, yeah.
But what about you, Rich?
I had a 9 o'clock meeting scheduled this week with one of my consultants, and they live on a working farm. So I had a message from them saying, I'm going to be late because the goats have broken out of the farm. I've never, ever had that. It's a great excuse to not be late for a meeting. You know, normally it's like car trouble, isn't it? Or something, but just, you know, that's a genuinely believable story. So that was a first for me, probably not the last, to be honest, but yeah.
Amazing. My weird work moment of the week, I will now share it, has come into my brain. I was actually away. I was in the US this week for work and a bit of fun as well. And I landed at the end of last week. And of course, you've got the time difference, and got into bed at my friend's house where I was staying, and was about to go to sleep, and then realized I had about 10 emails to answer, and spent the next few hours until about 3 a.m. responding to emails, which is a terrible idea and ill-advised. But my ambition was to get things as much off my plate as I could so that I could actually enjoy the rest of the weekend, which I did. So Rich, the other question we asked to kick off the podcast is, are you where you thought you'd be at this point in your career, and why? And maybe in the process of answering, you can give us a little sense of your background and what you do today.
Yeah, it's a good question. So the mainstay of my career has been in recruitment. So I came in recruitment quite late, sort of like late early 30s. And I think I was in it working for someone else for about six, seven years, I think, something like that. So I think, and then the penny dropped of, oh, I potentially do this myself. And if you asked me where Marvel, our business, would be, you know, it was our birthday, fourth birthday 2 weeks ago, you know, I would never have dreamt of being anywhere in this situation. You know, even sat here, you know, talking to you guys and some of the brands we recruit for, the people that we've got working for us, some of the ideas that we brought out, you know, I think, you know, a lot of businesses, unfortunately, they don't succeed in the UK. Yeah, you know, I think it's still something ridiculous, like 9 out of 10, isn't it? So I think even surviving, especially in the current climate, is still a good thing. But also, you know, being successful, I think what we've seen and what we've done, and we've stood by our values. You know, obviously one of them is what we're going to talk about today. So if I, you know, in answer to the question, no, probably not. You know, I think I never thought I'd run a business. I never thought that would be something I'd ever do. But I think it shows that you just put passion in and put what you're about, and you stick to your beliefs and you stick to your values that you can achieve. So I think, yeah, in answer to the question, no, but it's great that I am.
So tell us a little bit about why you decided to implement the 4-day work week within your company.
Yeah, so I mean, to be open, I have ADHD. I was diagnosed at the age of 41, I think it was, so late, but quite obvious to many apart from myself. And, you know, one of the big things about, since I've started running a business and having ADHD, it can take its toll on you. It has massive benefits of, like, you can work at ridiculous pace, you can take on a lot, you can multitask and everything, but eventually that will take its toll on you. And I think it was, not December last year, the year before, I had an ADHD burnout. So I don't know if you know much about that, but it's not pleasant. I mean, and I love my business, and I literally didn't want to go to work. I didn't want to get out of bed. It was just complete burnout. And we went on holiday, and I think the holiday was great timing over Christmas, the break and everything. And it gave me a lot of time to reflect. And, you know, one of the things we are in our businesses, we are risk takers. And I thought to myself, I've been thinking about, like, looking at ways of how can we maximize performance but still keep everyone on point. But the other thing at the back of my mind was that if the founder can, you know, burn out, then anyone can. So I thought, right, what could we do? And I remember I was on a coach going to the airport, and I text my business partner. I said, what's your views on a 4-day week? And she just came back with, like, crying emojis. But then I was like, no, generally serious, what are your thoughts on it? And then we started talking more and more about it. And then we thought, well, it'd be stupid to just implement it. So let's trial it. And that's where the 6-month trial came in. And I remember when I posted it on LinkedIn that we were going to trial it, and it went completely viral, as most of the posts do around this topic. And I think, you know, the reason why we've done it is not just for me, it's for everyone in our business. You know, we've got parents, we've got people who want to do other things. You know, we've had people build a bar and goodness knows what, and, you know, in that time that they've used. But I think, you know, it is around about putting people first. And I think the 4-day week can do that. That's, you know, that's one of the things it can do.
Some of the stats I found around this were really fascinating. So it was like 60% of people prefer a 4-day week over a pay rise. 77% of employees show greater loyalty to employers who do adopt it. What have any of those elements fell true to your business?
Yeah, I mean, we've got, like, the 4-day weeks can work for everyone, right? So we've got something in our business where you could see it when we talked about it, their face was just like, that's not going to work for me. So they're a single mum. So what we've done is we've come up with a solution for them where they still benefit from, you know, the reduced hours on 100% pay. But we've accommodated that and that works for her. So what we have seen, though, I think, is we've seen people, I think it can kind of, because they look at you and they're almost grateful in a way that you would think about doing something like that. So they will have your backs. They will run through a brick wall through you as a business because that you're believing in them. Because, you know, it's the, for me, it's the most ultimate amount of trust I've ever put in anyone in our company, you know, to go, I'm going to pay you full wage and work on 4 days a week. And I trust you to do that. And it builds that trust between you and your employees. And I believe, you know, no matter what the size of the business, I think it does. That's one of the biggest things I've seen.
I'm sure you're aware there's the 4 day week foundation in the UK, which was sort of set up to provide support around piloting some of these programs within different organizations that signed up. And I think to date, 220 plus organizations have signed up according to their website. Yeah. And just to echo some of those stats that we've heard from Dan, I mean, I think 92% of the companies participating in the pilot decided to continue. Yeah. They saw increases in revenue, reduction in churn, 71% reduced burnout, 39% less stress. These are really, really compelling statistics. I think what's interesting is also, like, if you look at it in the context of why are we in this situation where we work a 5 day work week in the first place, we often don't challenge some of these models that we've just grown to accept over time. And so I looked into it a little bit, and I'll just bore you guys with a little bit of history, because I think it's quite interesting to learn why we find ourselves in what is arguably a construct towards working that is outdated and no longer fits with modern work. So first of all, if we go way back in time, 4,000 years ago, we had the Babylonians who developed the 7 day week based on what they understood to be seven planets. And then we kind of fast forward to 19th century Britain at the start of the Industrial Revolution, where we had a 6 day working week, people working very hard, very long hours in mills and factories. 6 day week because obviously Sundays were kept free for religious worship. We also had the emergence of unions, and many of those demands were around, you know, fewer working hours. And then we had two key people who made a big difference. One was Henry Ford in the US, who decided that he was going to play a more proactive role in ensuring that people were using their leisure time to put money back into the economy. So set in stone a 5 day work week. Also responded to the needs of Jewish workers at the time who had the Sabbath from sundown on Friday night to sundown on Saturday night. So it accommodated for all of that religious worship that was happening, Christians and Jewish people. And then we had over here in the UK, we had Mr. John Boot of the Boots Corporation, who had a factory in Nottingham, who similarly decided that he wanted to not overproduce product, didn't want an excess of product, and decided to pay people for 7 days, but give them a 5 day working week. So all of this is to say that this emerged from a time when people were working in factories and there was a need to regulate product to ensure that the union's needs were met and to make sure that people were able to worship as they saw fit on the weekends. Since the 1960s, companies have been challenging that model, understandably, especially as technology has come in and we've been sitting more at our desks and less likely to be standing in the assembly line of factories. And now we find ourselves in a position where the Netherlands and Germany have the shortest working weeks in Europe and are among the highest, most productive societies in the world. Mm-hmm. We had Microsoft Japan trialing a 4 day week and productivity shot up 40%. So lots of early stories over the last 10, 15 years that have suggested that this is an interesting approach. Obviously, we are now at a sort of watershed moment post-COVID where we've proven that actually we don't need to be tied to a particular time frame or a particular location to do our work, which has obviously liberated us a lot more from the traditional work week. The rules that once dictated a 5 day work week arguably no longer apply. And actually, if we can look at different models, we might be able to address a lot of the structural problems within the UK workforce. Working unemployment's an issue, underemployment is an issue. The care sector is in a sort of disastrous state at the moment. And we have this weird situation where kids go to school till 3:30, but we all have to work till 5. You know, there's also issues around sustainability. When people are more stressed out, they're more likely to drive, they're more likely to eat processed food, et cetera, et cetera.
So the whole bunch of things that could be addressed by looking at a four-day work week.
I think we're so stuck in our ways though, aren't we? That's the problem. I think, you know, it's like the whole work from home versus office, return to office mandate. Some are stuck in their ways around like very similar, around 5 days, or you've got to be in the office to be seen and do your job. But then there's, you know, people who are trying to drive this change. And I think all around it is, you know, we've learned from COVID, and especially we see this working recruitment obviously all the time, recruiting for businesses and speaking to candidates, is flexibility is the key to what people want, and people want to be trusted. I think that's two of the key bits that I've seen since the pandemic. It's accelerated some of this that's being brought into play now, and having topics and conversations like this. But I think, yeah, flexibility and trust for me, I think.
Some of the stats that you've put in your very detailed post, and you've said they've gone viral. That's how I found you. But your revenue's up. And you've called out that newbies have struggled. So new team members have struggled. So I'd love to give the listeners a bit more detail around. So you're a recruiter. Tell us a bit about the size of the business, how you do the 4 day working week, but what's the granular details of it? Where do you work? What hours do they work?
Yeah, so we're up to 10 heads now, a million turnover business. What I would say is that we're an intense business. We are, like, it is an intense experience working at Marwell, because the growth is just so rapid. And then when you take a day off, you must think, God, the bloke's mental doing this. But there is method to the madness, I think. But what you do find is, and we interview people based on, can you cope with this now? That's what we will be doing, because, you know, that we've experimented with it, but now it's technically here to stay. So we now need to look at people and going, can that person adapt, and can that person cope with the intensity of working in 4 days? But I would rather have someone who comes in and works for 4 days at 100% than 5 days at 75%. But what we've had, particularly two people who have joined in the last 3 months to the business, it's like a big, big shift for them. And where they found the real challenge has been organization. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing of fitting everything in. Also, like, one of them has the Monday off, because how we work it is 50% do the Monday, 50% do the Friday. So our business is open 5 days a week, but we've got that coverage. So the person coming in on the Tuesday finds, Christ, I've got loads of stuff that's, you know, my work mounted up on the Monday, and I've now, that's kind of affecting me. So that organizational piece is super important. So the biggest shift, I think, for people coming from working 5 days, where you can be a bit more, come in Monday morning, have my coffee, go through a few emails, it's like, right, no, you're in, you go, and, you know, and it's, you know, you're working straight off the bat. And I think that's where people find it really, really challenging, is that shift of organization. How is your time spent? And also being a bit more selfish with your time. You know, that's one of the things that's really benefited me, because I will literally, if you send me an email, I'll open it straight away, and I'll probably action it probably straight away. Now I'm a lot more selfish with my time, because the 4 day week makes you do that. So I think it can drive good behaviors as well. We all need to prioritize better. You know, we all need to be more organized. We all need to be more efficient. And I think that's what it does. But I will say that, you know, it can be a challenge for some. You know, if you're a bit of a, if you like plodding along, recruitment industry as well. You know, I think it's one of those things where the recruitment industry itself, a lot of people, I think, would not think it lends itself well to a 4 day week, because it's just constant. I don't know if you've ever spoken to anyone else who works in recruitment, but it's pretty intense. Oh, yeah.
Something like that. Crazy stuff.
When I first started, and you used to, you know, if you were the first to leave the office, you know, it was almost like written warning type thing. And it was like, you know, work more hours. If you work more hours, you'll be better off, you know. And we're now doing the opposite. And I think we're seeing the benefits, you know, like we're about in this current quarter, we've had the best quarter in 4 years.
Wow. You know, are you then... KPIing people more so? Are there objectives? Are there how are you actually doing it from a managerial perspective to ensure people are performing and like sharing best practice? Because like you say, having to be more organized, how are you upskilling people to help them?
So we have adapted our KPIs from the 5-day to the 4-day. The KPIs won't change because the job hasn't changed, you know. So our KPIs are very much more around like quality rather than going send out 100 CVs this week or make 500 phone calls, whatever it is. But I think what people have also found that challenging, filling that in. But people get there. That's what I will say. If you give them the time, people will get there.
We've had a lot of conversations about people's general distractibility due to social media and their interaction with technology. I think what's interesting about what you're saying is that you're actually asking people to be more focused in the time they have, which potentially kind of goes against what is people's natural inclination right now. I wonder if you're seeing that kind of tension as well.
I think for us, we're saying, look, we will give you a day, that day to yourself to do whatever you like, but this is what we're asking in return a little bit. And our team are in for that. You know, we've not basically, Lucy and I have not sit around and gone, right, this is what we're doing, and you're just going to follow that. You know, when we did the experiment, we talked to everyone and said, look, we're going to experiment this. What are your thoughts? And, you know, I would say 90% of them were like, thought it was Christmas, come early, because it literally did come out of the blue, but that's kind of how we are. But then when we were experimenting it and we gave it, I think we gave it 6 months. I think we gave it, was it six? Yeah, I think it was six. And we actually told them, you know, we said, look, Lucy and I are very comfortable after 4 months. This is working for us. What are your thoughts? Would you be happy doing this full time? And we also did, you know, like questionnaires and feedback, and we've got all that. And you know, we publicized all the stats around that, around how our staff have given feedback to us around their mental health, less sick days, you know, all these types of things. And, you know, that's the thing, because of the size we are, we're able to do that. I imagine that's what's a challenge for a bigger business. You know, that would be really challenging, but we've got that sort of relationship with our staff to go, are you in? And they were like, yeah. But they know what the trade is that you come to work and you give it everything. You know, and I think that's like, I've got, I played quite a lot high level of sport, and that's kind of come from that, around sort of, you know, being in that high performance culture, around going, so when you're here to work, there's your downtime, go and use it, you know, and that works for us at the moment. And, you know, I think, but if people sort of said, this isn't working, we would look at it, and we may adapt it, we may not do it, you know, like the way I look to this is the worst that happened is we just go back to how we were. You know, it's like, that's one of those things. It's like, it's not going to be the end of the world, is it? I mean, I might lose a bit of face on LinkedIn, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's worth trying. Mm. And at the moment, it's working for us.
Do you think there is a limitation of business size that could adopt it? You mentioned a little bit earlier, like, I think any business can do it. Like, how scalable do you think this is?
Yeah, because I'm sure I think there's a business in Australia, isn't there, who's a reasonable size, who's trialling it at the moment, I was reading, and I think they're at about 800 headcounts. It'd be very interesting to see how that materialises. I think where big business would find it challenging is the trust element, I think. I really do. It's one of those where it's no surprise to me that smaller businesses are the ones who are benefiting, who are doing it effectively and putting it in full time. But I still think it's doable. Anything's doable, right? Or at least giving it a try. But I think you just need that CEO or that founder or that MD to go, do you know what? Let's try and do something really different to either try and, because for us, for me, it's 100% improved our performance. Like the revenue will, you know, it's testament to that, but also, yeah, the quality of work that we do now, the efficiency of it. I think one day someone will do it. I think a bigger business will do it. It just needs someone to take that leap of faith, I think. And yeah.
What do you find that people do with that extra day?
Yes. So
capture the goats.
Yeah. So that guy built a bar on his farm. Literally incredible. One of our consultants is training to be a yoga instructor. I think someone goes to like Pilates. I go to the gym and just go to the forest where there's no phone reception and switch off, you know. I'm not fussed about what people do, because I saw something the other day where someone's saying, you know, you should make them do, they have to do something. I'm like, it's their time, right? You know, like for me, at the weekends, my son plays football and rugby all day Saturday, all day Sunday. I get no respite. Once I've done, if I was Monday to Friday, work, relentless, and then I'm straight, and then I'm into being, you know, being a dad and running my son around to all these football grounds and rugby grounds, you get no respite. So if you want to just go, I would, you know, sit and watch Netflix all day, that's up to you. You know, do whatever you do to make yourself happy. We're cool with it, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's because everyone, when we first started, were like, oh, what am I going to do? Well, I have to do something. I think most people now are kind of like, I just chill out, to be fair.
Yeah, I think there's also an expectation maybe that everyone will develop a new hobby, but actually so many people have demands on their time, like parenting or things like that are actually very easily filled.
Yeah, I mean, we've got, I mean, most of our business, the people who win it have got kids, you know, and it's like, it, as I said, because we are so high growth, so quick, you know, it's like you need that time to yourself. You need that kind of space, I find. Because I want you to come to work and be the best you can be. I want you, you know, as soon as you come to start working for us, we want you at that performance level. So if that day helps you do that, and that mindset helps you, then amazing, because we benefit and so do they.
Yeah, I used to work with Lizzie Penny and Alex Hurst, who wrote a book called Work Style. And in it, they talk about seven groups who are structurally excluded from the existing approach to work. So older workers, carers, people with chronic illnesses, the disabled, people with mental health problems, and the neurodivergent, which you obviously touched on earlier. It feels like there's quite a lot of opportunity for those types of groups of people to really be accommodated by this. Is that your experience?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my own personal experience as an ADHDer is that I won't always need a break, but I do almost like need it enforced on me, if that makes sense, because my brain works at such a capacity, whatever's going on in the world around ADI, you know, I'm a big believer in it. And I think, you know, the more diverse your workforce, the more successful you will be, the more profitable you will be. Things like this will make your business more diverse as well, 100%. You know, looking at our business, it has worked in that capacity, and I know for a fact for others it will do as well. So again, that's another benefit, I think, for sure.
If every company moved to a three-day weekend, so if everyone had Friday off, for example, and the expectation was that everyone worked Monday to Thursday, would that have the same impact? Or for you, is it also about the flexibility to decide where that day falls?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you said to us, your business is not open 5 days a week, I don't think it would work. I think you've got to organize it in a way. I mean, we used, obviously there's a big paper on it, isn't it, on the research around like what models people have used. And we used a model that we thought was best for us. I personally, just personal opinion, I cannot see how our business, if it was shut for a whole day, I'm not sure what our clients would think and our candidates would think. You know, so we've worked it that we are open 5 days a week. We've got full coverage, and that's what works for us. I believe in it, and I'm in that world. So I'm, because I think there's a lot of people who are really dead against it, very like reluctant to it. But as I always say, when people comment on it on my LinkedIn and stuff, and I say, "Have you done this?" No. So how do you know?
Do you mind going into a little bit more around ADHD? Is that okay to talk about?
Yeah,
that?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Sure. I actually did a presentation on it, a part of my in-house role. So we've launched a This Is Me campaign all around EDI, and I'm dyslexic. So some of the stats are quite fresh. So, you know, 1 in 7 in the UK are diagnosed, but there's still around 2.5 million people undiagnosed. Almost 20% of the population are neurodivergent, and they're thinking it's going to continue to rise. You touched on, you're a later in life. I was 20, so as well. I thought that was quite late in life. And I look back now, and there were kids in school who were in like academic remove, suspension, all of that. Now it's so obvious. Back then they were just naughty kids, and you know, rocketed to bottom set. And so I'm so relieved that we're not in that place anymore. I just want, how how do you feel having that diagnosis? I've got a couple of questions. Does your business partner, are you yin and yang?
Poor business partner, I know. Yeah, I mean, I suppose to answer your first question, validation probably is the biggest word. I remember I got asked to go to one of our clients is Red Bull, and I got asked to go to Red Bull to talk about my ADHD journey, and I was like, yeah, bloody hell, I've been diagnosed about 4 months, and I'm standing in front of all the Red Bull employees in Covent Garden. I'm talking about some pretty personal things, to be honest. And yeah, I think I look back on my life and I go, okay, so I was rubbish. I wasn't great at school. Yeah, I was really good at sport. That's all I cared about. But I had no dedication to completing things like revision, exams, dropped out of uni, you know, had no interest in that. All I cared about was making it in professional sport. And when that didn't happen, I was like, oh my goodness me. You know, now I've got to look back and go, you know, was that me? But now I probably know there's a reason behind that, if that makes sense. Other things like having a beer, I can't just have one. You know, it's one of those, you know, my brain has a real big dopamine deficit. And, you know, when I have something that, you know, like that, it's like, oh, your brain is craving that. So I understand that now, and I put more stuff in place. You know, my son was diagnosed 3 months after me. He's like a little mini me. He also has autism as well. So we went down that route as well. So, you know, obviously the neurodiverse is very close to our family. But now I can see the stuff that was happening to me, what could potentially happen to him. So as a parent, being diagnosed, it's massively benefited us as well, because we're going through these things like, I don't know if you know, like the other day, for example, I don't know if you've heard of rejection sensitive dysphoria, called RSD, which basically means if any negativity or any rejection to an ADHD person, like compared to a neurotypical person, is like the end of the world. So my son... something happened at school, and for like 2 weeks just wasn't himself, and it was the smallest of things, but it made the biggest of differences to him. And I've been there, you know, like I've had it at work, you know, in the workplace, your boss says something, you're like, oh my god, I'm gonna get sacked, oh my god, you know. So I'm very wary around these types of things, how I treat my employees now and stuff like that as well, because as you say, 20% are neurodivergent now. There are a lot of people out there who don't know that they are, or might be going through their journey, or might not want to disclose it. My business partner's dyslexic, so we're both neurodivergent. So we're very passionate around this topic within our business, and why you see a lot of the stuff that we do as well. So, yeah, go back to your question, validation. Sorry,
thank you so much for sharing, because it's I just think that you're very open about it, and it provides clarity. Like, it provided clarity for me. You know, those moments of confusion when you're younger and you're like, why am I not getting this? Why is everyone else around me seem to be like getting this, and whatever it could be? But it does. And then it doesn't say playing it to a strength, but you know, I shared the story with my company and how I help. We did structured it. How do I help myself? How can others help me? And I'm sure you've done the same. It's like, how to work with people like this just to get the best out of them. And so many people have just changed how they structure an email to me. It's like, it's simple.
I write at the bottom of my email that I'm ADHD. I don't know if you've seen, and my business partner does the same around being dyslexic, because, like, you know, be open. You know, the more open you are, I think the more awareness it creates, and it gives more understanding, doesn't it? I think. Mm.
You touched on ADHD burnout as well. Like, I don't know what the signs of that are. Do you mind talking about that?
Yeah, I don't. Please keep picking words. No, I'll go there as in the conversation, but like physically, I don't want to go there. Yeah, it's like, how do I describe it? I think I remember that period of time leading up to it. It was like 6 months. I absolutely hammered it at work. It was ridiculous. I was working ridiculous hours, and I thought I was invincible, if that makes sense. Like, because you've got ADHD, you can work at this pace, you can do this many tasks, and you go, and you almost believe in yourself that you are like untouchable when it comes to your body and how much, but your body is your body, right? It will stop you at some point, and it will say no. And that's what happened to me. And I remember, like, gradually started not feeling very well. So I was physically unwell, but then also it's more the mental state of it. And like getting an email on my phone, not even wanting to look at it. I just put my phone away and put it up in my bedroom. Didn't want anything to do with work. Didn't want to get off the sofa, nothing. And it was just like, when you go from being this person who's on the outside super confident, like I am, and, you know, like the face of the business and out there posting all this stuff, but then behind closed doors, you're this person who's just within yourself and knackered and just, yeah, it can be quite obvious, but some people might just go, oh, you're just tired or you're just, but actually it was the turning point for me to go, Christ, you can't go there again. But like, yeah, and that's where obviously the 4-day week came, and we wanted to give that an opportunity because, you know, it's like, you've got to look after yourself, right? You know, and like Lucy and I, both as founders, said, if we're like that, that will have a detrimental effect to the business. You know, we're the spine of the business and we've got to be 100%, you know. So, yeah, but not a pleasant experience at all, to be fair.
Thank you for sharing that.
Sorry.
Son, I mean, my daughter has ADHD as well, as product of a brain injury at birth. So she's had a number of things she's sort of overcome. She's thriving. She's doing great. But ADHD has certainly been one of those things that's been a constant. Luckily, diagnosed quite early, and you know, is doing okay with it and managing it. So a lot of the behavior you're describing feels very familiar to me as an observer. And I'm curious, I think, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about what work will mean for her in the future. And obviously, there are so many unknowns about work for any child, let alone children who are going to have different challenges in the workplace. Mm. What kind of world of work would you hope would exist for your son in the future?
So that's a really good question. A working world where there is acceptance that everyone is different. I think that's one. I think one where we create cultures where you can be yourself. Because I know for years, you know, I've been told by people that, you know, I was the sole destroyer of a culture. That's what I got told once. But I now know that was because of my ADHD. You know, that was part of the reason why. And but. Can you imagine being told that? You know, it's not a pleasant thing, to be fair. But then also, I think that judgment is then, you know, caused me to kind of go, do you know what? I'm going to absolutely put everything I can into my business and use that as well. But I think, you know, what I've seen, and I get a lot of people message me on LinkedIn because I'm very open about my ADHD, and I get the biggest thing that I get is people saying, no one understands me. You know, and I think we need to create cultures where you don't just assume and you don't just judge, because you never know what's going on. Like, I didn't know. I've been working for 21 years, you know. I didn't have a clue. You know, it was my business partner that told me, saying, I think you need to go get checked. And then I went online and looked at all the things. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm all of those. And then when I had the testing done and I'm in, like, the top 1% for my age range in the country, for the test, you're like, you know, I'm pretty up there when it comes to ADHD. So I can imagine there are a lot of things that people I've been judged about in my working career where people have gone, you know, what? But because no one knew, you know, and if you don't have cultures where people could recognize that, you know, like things where, I don't know whether you have things like, you know, you have like mental health sort of people in businesses starting having stuff for neurodiversity where people can spot those signs and things like that. And I think that would benefit. But I think the biggest thing is, cultures where you can be yourself and be accepted for whoever you are. Because I think there's a lot out there that don't. And that's not going to accommodate people like, you know, our children in the future.
There's so much unknown around what jobs will even exist, right? So even understanding how the options, and I think, you know, this all affects education as well, right? So I think one of the really encouraging signs that I'm seeing in my daughter's school is that they do have Neurodiversity Week every year, and she is invited to get up and speak about it, which certainly would never have happened during my schooling days. I think what I'm not seeing so much is the sort of the appreciation for what work will look like in the future, or a desire to challenge some of the thinking about around that from a young age. Because obviously a big impact on these kids will be that, again, that choice and that flexibility and
and encouraging them to gain a greater understanding of how they work best. And I do believe to some extent that's happening, but we're in the same way that we're stuck in a 5-day work week and in work, we're stuck in a similar kind of format in school.
You know, but then there's also like some serious strengths that you can unlock from neurodiverse people. Like, you know, ever since I've worked, you know, I've never missed a target. I've always been a high achiever, but I would never be, like I always say, I would never be the school prefect, because I do it in a way where it's not the traditional way, and it's not the way that everyone goes, oh, that's how it should be done. But I get the results. I think we just need to be a bit different about look at the outcome. How did you get there? Let's learn from those type of people and how they did that.
Yeah, and just going back to the topic of 4-day work week, my daughter had her first detention yesterday. She's in year eight. First one since she's been in secondary school. I know. And there's a part of me, if it were for behavior, I think I'd be more accommodating in some ways, because I don't mind her pushing against some of the rules a little bit. You know, I'm actually more comfortable with that. But what she actually got it for was for lates. So being late to class. Yeah. And of course she's late because she has ADHD. Yeah. In particular, she was late to PE because it requires her changing and things like that. So she has to sort of stay on task before she goes in. And it doesn't help that she hates PE. So that's obviously part of it. But I think it does go back to the question around, should people be allowed to work the way that they want to work? And should they be given?
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I would never, I don't clock watch people. Like, if I trust you to give you a job, I trust you to do your job. I'm not here to like go, right, it's 8:30, what are you doing? You know, I think if you break that trust, that's a different conversation, isn't it? I think. But yeah, you know, I think you hear stuff about that all the time. You know, people who are late. I mean, weirdly, I'm the opposite with my ADHD. I'm never late for anything. So it's a bit different. But yeah.
I've got one more question. It's a bit of a gear change. So when Alice and I were starting up the podcast and we were going through the whole reasoning as to why we were doing it, it was drivers around midlife career and this pivot out. So Alice pivoted out of corporate life. I did the same last year. And you've done it as well to start up your own business. For listeners who are potentially on the fence, who are thinking about doing it, what guidance, advice would you give to somebody who's considering setting up their own business and pivoting out of whatever current situation they're in?
Firstly, absolutely do it. Because you will always regret it, won't you? I personally think, you know, it's one of those where I was lucky enough, though, I'm not sure I could have done it on my own, to be fair, but I was lucky enough to have a business partner that I went in with, which gave me a bit more confidence. But, you know, I thought to myself, give it, you know, if it doesn't work out, you can always go back to that, because, you could. But I think the biggest advice I would give is you've got to literally go for it, though. You can't go into it half-hearted. You can't go into it 50-60%. You've got to give it 100-110%, especially, look, in the current climate. I mean, we started our business during a pandemic, right? So, you know, I think people looked at us and go, what the hell are you doing? But we saw a struggling market, and I see that as opportunity. That's the way I look at it, you know. And I think if you are looking to make a shift or make a change, you know, do it, I think. But you've got to do it with the understanding to yourself that there are going to be times where you're like, what the hell have I done? Like, I've had that multiple times, wanted to give up. And you need to surround yourself with good people. That's the other thing I did. I surrounded myself with no negativity. I surrounded myself with people that I know that I could take advice from all walks of life, not necessarily in the corporate world, but, you know, because there will be times where you'll be like, this is tough. I just need to go for a beer with someone or something like that. So I think having a good network around you and a good community around you to go and make that change as well is important, because life will say that it's not always going to work out, you know, and there will be times where it might not look like that, but, you know, yeah. Does that answer the question?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time today. If people want to find you and to chat with you more, what would be the best way to reach you?
LinkedIn, I suppose, probably is where I get most of my following. So on there.
Okay, great, perfect. Thank you so much for being here today. We really appreciate it. It's a really interesting discussion.
Great conversation. Thank you, Rich.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye.
And thank you to everyone for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have any Work is Weird moments to share, please find us on LinkedIn and let us know what they were. In the meantime, have a wonderfully weird week, and we look forward to seeing you next time.